RAGBRAI 40, the Register's annual Great Bike Ride Across Iowa, rolls out of Sioux Center on Sunday. Today, we'll look ahead to this year's ride and look back over the last 40 years. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Today, we'll talk about why RAGBRAI has endured for 40 years. We'll find out why people from all over the world flock here to bike across Iowa in the heat of July. I'll talk with TJ Juskowitz. He's the director of RAGBRAI. We'll reminisce about RAGBRAI's past with Chuck Offenberger, who has done all or part of the ride for 30 years. And we'll talk bike laws and safety issues when you're on the road. Join our conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. The Register's annual Great Bike Ride Across Iowa starts on Sunday. This is the 40th year that cyclists have set out to ride across the state. In the next hour, we'll get a preview of RAGBRAI 40. We'll talk with volunteers who come back year after year from all over the country and all over the world. I'll reminisce about RAGBRAI's past with Chuck Offenberger, formerly of the Des Moines Register. He has ridden all or part of 30 RAGBRAIs. And then later in the hour, we'll talk about bike laws and bike safety. We also want to hear from you this hour. What keeps you coming back to RAGBRAI year after year? Do you volunteer? Do you put up people at your house? Do you let people camp on your lawn? Let us know. 866-780-9100. What makes this event so special to you? You can also tweet us at IPR Talk, or you can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And my first guest today is TJ Juskowitz, the director of RAGBRAI. Welcome back to the show, TJ.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for being here. I'm sure it's an incredibly busy time for you.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun getting ready. As there's so many people that are coming from all over the world, and we're getting notes that, hey, we're arriving in the United States, and we're arriving in Iowa. So you can feel RAGBRAI is just on the horizon.
Absolutely. And I was looking at the route. It starts in Sioux Center, Cherokee, then to Lakeview, Webster City, Marshalltown, Cedar Rapids, Anamosa, and Clinton. When you picked the route for this year, is there anything special about that route because this is RAGBRAI 40?
Well, we're just looking for a good blend of small town, large towns, medium-sized towns, because we didn't want to just focus on just, hey, let's go to a massive-sized town just because of the 40th anniversary. So we were able to work in a town the size of a Lakeview, Iowa, which probably population less than 1,200 people, and the second largest city in our state in Cedar Rapids. So we've got pretty much the extremes, a small town, big town, but you know what? We've got an amazing amount of fun that's going be packed into those eight overnight towns.
Of course, when John Karas and Donald Call did the first RAGBRAI 40 years ago, they had no idea what would happen, that this event would really take on not just a life of its own, but something more than that. I mean, this has been really become a part of the fabric of Iowa, and thousands of people have been a part of it over the years. In planning for RAGBRAI 40, have you and the people you work with sat and really reflected on what is it that has kept this event so strong for so long?
It's pretty simple. What John and Donald were looking for out there when they were writing columns, it's the people and towns that make RAGBRAI the event that it is. No other ride can duplicate what we have. The Iowa hospitality, when you roll into those communities, when you see, you know, 85-year-old ladies baking pies in the churches and little kids waving American flags, I mean, it's Americana at its best. And that formula of incredible people with the hospitality and just a town every 8 or 10 miles that welcome riders in, that's impossible to duplicate. We do it better in Iowa than anyone else, and that's why our ride continues 40 years later.
I've looked ahead at the weather forecast for next week. that's a little bit grim. Are you concerned about the heat?
Well, we're always concerned. But the nice thing is that, you know, if you're not used to this temperatures by now, they've been training in this type of weather for the entire summer because it's been a hot summer. So hopefully they've got some good miles in the heat, and take precautions. If you get out in the morning, you know, drink lots of fluids, be smart about, you know, stop, you know, in every town and get off the bike, get into some shade. They'll have a much more enjoyable ride. But we've also got plenty of safety officials out there to make sure, you know, riders have what they need.
I've heard that there are about three pretty flat days on this year's ride.
Sure. Well, the flat days can be a challenge if we've got a headwind, which probably cool riders down a little bit. If we got a 10-mile-an-hour wind in their face, they probably would appreciate that. But, you know, those flat days, at least you don't have to encounter the hills, but wind can always be a challenge. So that'll help them a little bit.
It seems like every RAGBRAI after the event is over, there's one hill that everybody talks about. Is that hill waiting out there this year?
Oh, there's a couple of good ones. Anytime we cross the Des Moines River Valley, the Karis Loop actually has got extra opportunities if you want to go up and down the Des Moines River Valley two extra times to do the extra mileage over to Stratford, Iowa. They can get some nice little climbs in. So if they're really in need of having some extra hills, we threw in a couple extra ones. The one on the actual route in Lehigh is a pretty good one as well. And then there's a thing called Schoolhouse Hill, which is right in the heart of Lehigh. I'll put that hill up against any hill in the state of Iowa.
All right, so we'll probably be hearing a lot about that.
Yeah.
A lot of Facebook status updates, a lot
you
on
bet.
The Twitter stream, and just a lot of people who'll remember it forever. You mentioned the Karis Loop, and that's the century loop. That's the 100-mile day if people want to go that far?
Well, we never put the word century on there. We call it the Karis Loop, and you know, our namesake of one of our co-founders, John Karis. So since he retired, it's been named the Karis Loop. Sometimes it's 98 miles. This year it's 104 miles. So
and
if we put
hilly.
Century
so
on
that,
there, someone's going to come back and say, hey, you said 100, and it's actually 104. So okay. It's a doozy of a loop this year.
So it's an extra hilly loop.
You bet.
Is there anything that you're particularly excited about this year, TJ?
You know, every year is special on RAGBRAI. We have a different route each and every year. You know, but again, when we roll into Sioux Center and see the people we haven't seen in a year from all over the world, I mean, that's exciting. But one of the special days when we hit Thursday over in Cedar Rapids, we are going to have an official program to celebrate our 40th anniversary and have a little program right before the Cannon Crows concert where we have some surprises in hand. It'll be about a 20-25 minute program right before the Cannon Crows take the stage, and it'll be a show that you don't want to miss.
Well, terrific. I just made plans with my 4-year-old son and my 4-year-old cousin that the three of us are going to do RAGBRAI 50 together.
Awesome. So, there you go.
We'll see you then. But TJ, have a great week next week.
Thanks, Charity. Hope to see you out there.
Yeah, thank you so much for being on the show. And there are people from all over the country and all over the world who come back to RAGBRAI year after year. They come back to ride it. They come back as volunteers. And one of those people is Barry Katz. He lives in the Hell's Kitchen area of Manhattan. He is a theatrical agent, and this will be his 25th year of coming to Iowa to ride RAGBRAI. He's here on the phone with us now. Hello, Barry.
Hi, how are you?
Great.
Greetings from New York.
So take us back 25 years. You were in New York City. What brought you to Iowa the first time to ride RAGBRAI?
Well, my mother is an avid bike rider, too, and she was very bored one day at the dentist office, randomly picked up a magazine, saw it was about travel, and said, oh, I'll look at this, then randomly turned to a page, saw pictures of bicycles, said, oh, I'll read this article. And it was about RAGBRAI. She told me all about it. So I said, oh, she really wants to go, but she won't go unless I join her. So I decided to join her. My father drove the car out there with her. My sister joined us. And then on the way driving to Sioux City, it turns out the only reason she did it was because she thought I wanted to go, would only go if she went with me.
So neither one of you really wanted to do it?
No, and if she hadn't been bored and hadn't randomly picked that article, my whole life would be different. We were just doing it for each other.
And did you have any connection with Iowa before that?
No, I had driven across it once when I went cross country, and like most Easterners, thought it was flat at the time.
Right, you get a different impression when you're on a bicycle.
Yeah, so, every time I get back, people say, well, at least it's flat, and it gets me very upset.
So that first ride, what was it about that experience that really changed your life?
You know, it's the people. It's the people in Iowa. It's the people I've met all over the country. I mean, this year alone, I had people visit me from RAGBRAI from Iowa, Louisiana, Cape Cod, and I visited RAGBRAI friends in Kansas City, Denver, and Maryland. But it was the camaraderie. It's the social aspect, I think.
Why do you think it's a situation where people make these strong connections? What is special about riding across the state in the heat of July with people that really forms a bond?
Well, the good and bad thing is that it's a lot of work to ride across the state of Iowa. And so it's a great equalizer. Everybody's wearing bike shorts, t-shirt and jersey, and everybody's sweating, and everybody's working hard together, so we have a common goal. And I tell her, you can't tell the farmers from the doctors when you're on Ragbri. We're just all together having fun, and also every little town has something. You know, is a carnival of sorts.
Every summer, we see a lot of cyclists out on the road in the weeks leading up to Ragbri here in Iowa. Where do you train?
Well, Central Park, believe it or not, it's a giant park right in the middle of the city, and it's a six-mile loop without any cars in it. It's got a lot of bikers and joggers and skateboarders, and I can do that after work, and then I just hop on my bike. There's a bike path up the west side, up the Hudson, where I live on the west side, and I go up over the bridge into New Jersey, and then I head out and do riding.
So that's kind of a different environment than you'll be riding in
yeah.
in Iowa. Was that kind of a shock to you the first time you rode here?
It was a big shock. When we got to, for some reason, we got into Sioux City. We didn't see many people that first evening 25 years ago. And then when we left, and there we saw thousands of people riding together. And it's always a whole different experience.
We're going to be talking in a moment to one of the friends that you've made on Ragbri years ago. The very first year you rode, you met Chuck Offenberger.
I sure did.
Tell me about that meeting.
Well, that was back when he was doing the columns for Ragbri, and I told everybody a story. I call myself Barry from Hell's Kitchen because I've lived in Hell's Kitchen for so long, and there was no TV show then. And I had run into a guy who lived a block from me, who happened to be an actor, so he was in the same profession. And it was the first time I met him, and everybody seemed shocked in Iowa that I didn't know this person that lived a block from me, who was in the same profession. And people saying, tell Iowa boy, tell Iowa boy. And I'm thinking, why would Iowa boy care? So I told him, and he stopped, and he wrote a little article. And then every year we would talk, and he would put little quotes for me in the paper. And recently he and Carla, his wife, came to New York to visit, and I gave them the tour.
Wonderful. So you think you're the only theatrical agent riding Ragbri?
Yes. If somebody can prove me wrong, please feel free to do it, but it's a small group of people that actually do the profession. We're only in the big cities. And I tell everybody on Ragbri I'm the only theatrical agent. I tell all the theatrical agents I'm doing it just in case somebody can come up with one other person.
Well, we'll have to see. Maybe you'll inspire some others. Barry Katz, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Barry Katz lives in Hell's Kitchen in Manhattan. He's been doing Ragbri. This will be his 25th year. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Ragbri 40 rolls out of Sioux Center on Sunday. And although he wasn't on the very first Ragbri 40 years ago, Chuck Offenberger, former Iowa Boy columnist for the Des Moines Register, you can find his work now on offenberger.com and in various other places, he has been on all or part of 30 Ragbris, and he's here with us again today. Chuck, thanks for coming back to the show.
Thanks, Charity. It's good to be here and good to talk Ragbri. I just, you know, when I hear you say the 40th Ragbri coming up, it just gives me pause, you know. I mean, it's just hard to believe that it's gotten to be that old.
Well, let's go back 30 years ago to your first Ragbri. How did you first get involved with it?
Well, of course, Ragbri was founded by John Karas and Donald Call, both at the Des Moines Register, colleagues of mine back then. And we all thought they were crazy when they started off on this. But, you know, then we could see the popularity of it growing. I did not ride those first 10 rides. I wrote about Ragbri in its first year. I did a profile story on Clarence Pickard, the old man from Indianola, who really sort of made Ragbri what it is today. I mean, he wrote it at 83 years old on the first one and convinced people you didn't have to be an Olympic athlete to do this. And so the crowds came. But after 10 years, Donald Call's back was starting to bother him, and he wanted to quit doing Ragbri. And he 2 weeks before the Ragbri of 1983, he called the bosses and said he wasn't going to do it, just wasn't able to do it. And so the editor of the newspaper at the time, Jim Gannon, called me in, and I was totally unsuspecting. And he said, Don Call just called me, and he's not able to do Ragbri. And so we really think we need at least two people out there covering this and writing about it in addition to writing on it and just meeting the crowds and stuff. And so John Karras is going to be out there, but we'd like to ask you to do this because, it sort of happens on your turf. Ragbri goes across Iowa, and you're writing about Iowa all the time. And so would you consider doing it? And I just looked at Jim Gannon, and I said, well, I got a couple problems here. I don't have a bike. And he said, this is 2 weeks before Ragbri, Charity. And I said, I don't have a bike and I'm broke. And he said, well, no problem. You call John Karras and tell him you're going to go with him and that we're going to buy you a bike and he'll tell you what to do. He said, I don't know what to do either. So I called John Karras and I said, so what do I do? I mean, do I go like to Sears and get a bike or something? And he said, no, he said, let me send you out to Bike World in Des Moines. There's a guy there named Forrest Ridgway who's the boss, and he'll fit you with a bike. So that's what I did. Started riding for 2 weeks and on that first Ragbri, and I was one hurting unit on that
sure
first
you,
one.
Had you ever biked?
Not in my adult years. I don't think I had ridden a bike since I was about a freshman in high school or an eighth grader, so it had been a long, long time. Now, at that point in 1983, I was jogging, so I was in fairly reasonable shape. But, of course, biking's just a different set of muscles. And so, I really was hurting on that first one.
You must have been pretty saddle sore, too, not just the muscles.
Oh, yeah, I really was. And I didn't know how to do it. And the idea that I was going to have to write a story every day, after doing this was just, I just didn't know how it was all going to work. Well, it worked. I loved it. And it got better every year. And, so I really got into it. And I was co-host of it with John Karras for 16 years, and my time lasted through 1998 when I left the paper. And, I went from thinking these people were crazy who were out there doing it back when it started to really admiring them. And then I got to know over the years at the start of Ragbri, I would often get to those opening towns like Sioux Center this year. And if you were there today or, this week, early in the week, you'd find a lot of people who are on Trans-USA bicycle rides who get there early and then ride across Iowa on Ragbri and then continue their journey. And I became intrigued about those people doing that kind of – having that kind of an adventure. So in 1995, that led to my wife, Carla, and I. We organized the Iowa 150 bike ride, a sesquicentennial expedition across the United States, 5,048 miles. And to promote Iowa's sesquicentennial celebration, which was coming up the following year in 1996. So we spent all summer riding our bikes across the United States. And, so obviously through all of this, I'm becoming a very enthusiastic and loyal bicyclist.
Absolutely.
And it changed my life. I mean, it got me in shape. It helped me get off cigarettes. I quit drinking. Just everything started working better.
And you met your wife because of bicycling.
I did. We met on the Raccoon River Valley Trail where we live today. We met over peach malts at the Dairy Stripe in Adel. And, so we share that history together. And we just really love being out there. Well, and then a significant thing in our lives, in the last 3 years, Carla and I have both been through cancer battles, and we called it tag team cancer because both of us were diagnosed. We went through extensive treatment. We were never sick at the same time. One of us was able to help the other one get through rough patches, and so. But for me, it wound up that I had two bouts of lymphoma, and I was pretty much a goner in 2010. But then they told me that because I was in reasonably good shape for a guy my age, all due to bicycling, I was a candidate for a stem cells transplant. And so I spent, in the November of 2010, 3 weeks in university hospitals in Iowa City and had a stem cells transplant, which has changed my life. Or saved my life, and now I'm feeling good and feeling healthy and looking forward to Ragbri this week. So you know, I'm a happy fella, and I owe a lot of my joy in life and life itself to bicycling and Ragbri.
Are you planning to go on Ragbri this year?
Yes, we are. We're going. We have a wedding. Some friends are getting married in Storm Lake Saturday night, so that'll take us up to Northwest Iowa, and then on Sunday, we're going to have a young friend from Storm Lake drive us over to the Ragbri route. We imagine we'll be jumping on in the late morning, about Granville or maybe Marcus, and then we'll ride to Cherokee, stay overnight, and with some friends there, and then ride on Monday's route, ride from Cherokee to Lake View, and stay overnight again. And then on Tuesday, we will ride on toward Webster City. And then when we get out in the Farnhamville or Gowrie area, we think we'll have had enough by then, so we're going to pedal on south back to our farm, and you know we'll have had 2.5 days on Ragbri then, and may go back and visit later in the week. We'll see, but for now anyway, that's what we're planning.
How's your wife's health now?
She's in great shape. Carla is the community relations director at Greene County Medical Center in Jefferson, and she's feeling good and working hard and back to full life, and so we are really feeling blessed and lucky. We've had a tremendous amount of help from people, lots of thoughts and prayers, and, of course, expert medical treatment. So we are really humbled by it all and grateful. And sometimes we wonder how this has happened, why it's happened. And we hang out at New Mallory Abbey, which is one of my favorite places in Iowa. And there's an old monk over there, Father Jim O'Connor, who's anointed us both, and he's watched us as we've kind of recovered. And Father O'Connor says, "Well, Chuck and Carla, I don't know why all this has happened, but it's pretty clear that God's got something in mind for you, so you better be listening." And we do.
Well, I'm so glad that things have worked out so well, and I'm so lucky to be able to talk with you today. And I want to go back to 1983 because we've all probably heard some of the lore of early Ragbri. And those early years, it was really a pretty small group of guys.
Well, 73 was actually the starting year. My first year was 83.
Right, right.
So 73, Donald Call and John Karras, they are among the early people who got involved as adults in bicycling again. There was called the biking boom. And, you know, in the 70s, people started riding. And so they had these multi-geared 10-speed bicycles of the time, and they would put on their gym shorts and T-shirts. There was no fancy clothing at the time, and they'd go out and ride around the Des Moines area. And there were very few organized bike rides, you know, just like Bill Riley would organize one out at the state fair, I remember, and they'd raise a little money for this or that cause. And so from that, Don and John said, "We're going to see if we can ride our bikes across the state. And if you want to go with us, be in Sioux City on such and such a date." They actually did it the week after Labor Day. So it was a fall ride, and they got to Sioux City.
That seems so much saner.
Well, in many ways it was, but they got to Sioux City, and there were like 300 people, and they were shocked. I mean, they had no plans. They had no maps. You know, they had rough ideas of where they wanted to wind up each of the days, but John Karras would sit down in the motel at night and draw up a route for the next day's ride, and they'd go out and find a mimeograph somewhere to run those off and hand them out to the riders. It was crazy. And they rode across to Davenport in 6 days instead of seven. And at the end, I think there were about 130 people there at the end. And, you know, everybody realized they'd been on a happening. And I mentioned earlier Clarence Pickard from Indianola. Mm-hmm. When that old man was able to do this, I mean, he was the superstar of the first Ragbri. And when he did that the next year, I mean, there people were, you know, calling and bombarding the Des Moines Register saying, you know, first of all, you can't do this in the school year. We all want to be able to go, and our kids want to go. And, you know, so they moved it back into July. And the timetable of it really became Don Benson, who was the logistics director, and we called him the wagon master. He'd put the routes together, and Benson was the PR director of the Register. Well, he had a couple of other events that were happening in the summer. One of them that was he worked on the Shrine Circus when it would come to Des Moines, and the other was the State Fair and the Register's big operation at the fair. So Benson had to fit Ragbri in between those so it would work in his schedule. And that's why Ragbri wound up being the last full week of July, which it became in its second year and has been ever since.
How big was it by 1983 when you rode your first rag bri?
There were about 5,000 riders on it in 83 when I came on board. And then over the next 5 to 7 years, it just exploded. And you know, there was no charge for it in 1983 when I came on, so it was free. And then eventually they had to start charging a fee. But I think it was in about 90, 91, 92 in that timetable. It just really just exploded. And one year we were riding, I remember the day was from Boone to Des Moines, and the Iowa State Patrol estimated we had 17,000 riders on the road. And the State Patrol then said, you know, we got to cut this. We got to trim it down. It's going to be 10,000 people is the max on any particular day. And the reason they came up with that number was because you could put 10,000 people on bikes on the highways and they would only take up half the road. If you went above 10,000, then they'd start taking the whole road. And believe me, on that day from Boone to Des Moines that year with 17,000 people, the whole highway was filled all the way down all day long. And
wow.
So that's when they realized they had to make some changes. So they started charging the fees, and then you know, for services like luggage hauling and the maps and, of course, all the logistics of putting this big thing together.
And getting in the lottery to see if
yeah,
you can actually go.
It's still a very reasonable fee. But at any rate, that helped the register, bring the numbers down to a more reasonable number now.
So on that first ride, you, as you mentioned, you were hurting. And I can only imagine how sore you must have been. And you were writing these stories. What was it that hooked you? What experience?
Well, first of all, I had been traveling Iowa for 10 years at that point for the register. And I got out there on my bicycle, and I felt like an idiot because I was seeing and hearing and experiencing things I'd never noticed before. And I thought, well, here's the difference. I was going 10 miles an hour or 12 miles an hour on my bicycle instead of going 65 or 70, you know, in the car. And so I was like, I really looked around and I thought, for the first time, it really hit me how beautiful Iowa is in the summertime. And then secondly, I looked around and here are these people really from all 50 states and 12 to 15 other countries. And it occurred to me, RAGBRAI has become one of the few truly major league events that happens every year in Iowa. And by that I meant something that was so cool that people would come from across the country and around the world to come experience it. And that just knocked me out. And then, you know, you get all these people out there from all different kinds of walks of life, and they're sharing the same experience. Everybody's tired. Everybody's sore and, you know, lathering on sunblock and all of that and eating pork burgers and drinking lemonade. Everybody's got a story. They all want to talk. And so, you know, it was a great place for me to be as a reporter. In fact, after I covered the Persian Gulf War in 90 and 91 and came home and was back on RAGBRAI, I wrote a piece afterwards that said, it occurred to me that RAGBRAI and war are alike in three ways. They're both very big. They're both very confusing. And everybody in them wants to talk. Which good place for a reporter to be.
Right. Yesterday when you were on the show, you told us about the town of Gravity and how RAGBRAI was going to go through there on RAGBRAI 20. And you actually organized an effort to clean up the town and paint it and make it look nice before all of the RAGBRAI riders came through. How does RAGBRAI affect the towns that it goes through?
Well, there's a huge economic impact. If you are an overnight host town now with the riders all staying in your town, it's probably a one-day shot of about $5 million into your town. Think about that. What else would bring $5 million into Sioux Center, Iowa, or Cherokee, or Lakeview in one day? So there's this huge economic impact. And the pass-through towns during the day, it's not unusual for them to make, you know, $250,000 to $500,000, you know, serving lunches and rolls and lemonades and all of that. So it brings a whole lot of money into these communities, and that's great. But I'll tell you what, I've been on the organization end of RAGBRAI twice myself, in Storm Lake and in Jefferson, where Carla and I have served on the organizing committees when we've lived in those towns. And it's a tremendous amount of work, of course. But what you learn when you do that is probably what the best thing is about RAGBRAI. It forces everybody in those towns to work together. And you get to know new people, you know, that you've never met, just because it takes everybody in those towns to have a successful hosting of RAGBRAI. So you get everybody involved and new people, new ideas. And that just spins on for years to come with people, you know, stepping up and taking part and running for city councils and county boards of supervisors and all that, just simply because they enjoyed it when they got involved. And so I think the way it unites communities is the number one thing that RAGBRAI is the best thing about RAGBRAI. And, of course, the other thing is, in terms of bringing people from, you know, across the United States and around the world into Iowa, you know, like the State Fair does that too. And that's great. I'm glad it does. But what the different thing about RAGBRAI is, it takes all these people all the way across the state. So they really see Iowa as Iowans live it, you know, and these in these wonderful towns and cities across the state. And it's very addictive to people from outside. They come in here and they get it. They understand what a tremendous lifestyle we have here in Iowa. And a lot of them come to that understanding because of RAGBRAI.
Well, Chuck, have a great time out there this year.
Will do. Thanks, Charity. Great to talk to you.
Chuck Offenberger is a former columnist for the Des Moines Register. He has participated in the last 30 RAGBRAIs. Coming up after the break, we'll talk about bike laws and some conflicts that can arise from bicycling on the roadways. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Today we're talking about the Register's annual Great Bike Ride Across Iowa, RAGBRAI 40. Cyclists will travel from Sioux Center to Clinton over the course of the week, starting on Sunday. And we do want to hear from you. What makes this event so special for you? Are you going to ride it this year? Have you ridden in the past? Do you volunteer on RAGBRAI? Maybe you're in one of the pass-through towns. Let us know. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And bicycling in Iowa is growing. It seems to be getting more and more popular. There are some wonderful new trails in Iowa in addition to the wonderful old trails that we already had. Many towns and cities are working to make their communities more bike friendly, but there can be some tension out there on the road. We're going to talk now about bike laws and bike etiquette. Mark Wyatt is here with me. He's executive director of the Bicycle Coalition. Hello, Mark.
Good morning. How are you today?
Great. Thanks for coming back to the show. And Nate Vanderwide is president of Bicyclists of Iowa City. Hello, Nate.
Hello.
Thank you for being here. And Mark, first, before we get into bike laws and bike etiquette, I know you were on the advance team that rode the RAGBRAI route, and you're going to be riding it again next week, an even hotter week, I believe. So what's the route like this year?
You know, we had a great week out there. It's a spectacular route, maybe some of the best road conditions that we've ever seen. It is really 3 days of flat, which seems fairly easy, and I think a lot of people will enjoy that, unless there's some heat and headwinds that will make that more difficult. After the 3 days of flats, you've got some hills leaving Marshalltown, and then towards Anamosa. I mean, Grant Wood painted those scenic hillsides
gently for a reason. Rolling may not feel so gentle, right?
And then the last day to the river is actually a fairly long day, about 70 some miles over to the river. So it's kind of the best of Iowa.
That Cedar Rapids to Anamosa day seems really short to me.
You know, it does, and. You know, it's kind of fine because they're having a great big party in Cedar Rapids. They have the Counting Crows playing. The next morning, the Czech Village is going to do breakfast on the bridge. And I hope people really understand that stopping is often as fun as going. You know, it's a good time to take your helmet off and enjoy that Iowa culture.
All right. And maybe you won't suffer too much if you don't leave right at the crack of dawn.
That's right.
All right. Well, let's move on to talking about bike laws, because there is some tension out there on the roads. And I know that many communities are trying to make things safer and more convenient for bikers and for the cars that have to be on the roads with them. Mark, what is the basic rule of thumb for bikers? I mean, their vehicles on the road.
Absolutely. In fact, Iowa Code says that is that the bicyclists have the same rights and duties as the operators of vehicles, except by nature where it doesn't apply. And so there's little nuances in the Iowa Code that just don't apply to the bike, and that's kind of important to note. Bicycles should follow the traffic laws.
It can be tricky out there on the road, though. There are some things about being on a bike that are obviously incredibly different than being in a car. One of the things that you run into when you bike around quite a bit is that when you get to a red light, the sensor doesn't always pick you up. So you could sit there forever and follow the rule of the road, or you can figure out another mm-hmm. way to get across the street. There's another problem, and this we'll talk about. Nate, I know I want you to weigh in on this as well. There are not always bike lanes, and cars don't seem to necessarily respect the fact that a bicycle is a vehicle on the road sometimes, and they'll pass you very close.
Yeah, I've certainly had that happen a number of times where sometimes the car may not realize how close they're passing, or you could literally just reach out and you know, touch their mirror that comes by at 40, 50 miles an hour, and that can be a little hair-raising. What they also don't realize is that you're riding on a very thin tire most of the time, and you're right on the edge of the road, so there's rocks, stones, and glass there, and you're trying to avoid that, so you ride just a little bit further into the lane, and also gives you a little buffer. If you sense the car coming too close, you can move over just a little bit and still be on some kind of pavement without getting off onto the shoulder. So, yeah, we certainly have run into angry motorists, intentional or not intentional, but also have heard stories of people getting things thrown at them and yelled at them. Of course, we've all been yelled at, I think, in one time or another.
Sure, sure. But that does tend to be the exception. But still, there sometimes, even with people who are well-meaning, there can be a lack of understanding about what it's like to be on a bike.
Yes, that's correct. And that gets to the point where, you know, if they're not regular cyclists, they don't know what it's like to ride amongst traffic. You do feel pretty vulnerable sometimes. Even if you are in a lane that's supposed to be for a bicycle, cars tend to pass pretty close. If they see that painted line, they think that that's some kind of physical barrier and can pass quite close.
You know, I've heard from a number of people who have taken up bicycling that said it's made me a better driver. It's made me more aware, and I look in places differently. I look for pedestrians. I look for bicycles that I wouldn't have done that before. And so I think that perspective from the bike helps a lot of people, and I wish more people would bicycle because I think it raises that awareness.
Mm-hmm.
I think there are also questions in the minds of many drivers about how close you can be when you pass a bike, and what is the rule there?
You know, really, specifically, the Iowa Code says that you need to pass on the opposite side of the road, and you don't return to the lane until you're done passing. So, you know, really, you should give bicyclists the full lane if you can, and I think that's one of the big keys to passing safely. We've been working on a 3-foot passing legislation for the past few years to try to define some of those other situations, like bike lanes and things that don't have same width as a 12-foot. 12-foot road.
Well, that was going to be my next question, because bike lanes are great to have
sure.
on the roads, but they are fairly narrow. If you are a driver passing a bike on a bike lane, do you need to get over, or is it safe to just continue straight ahead?
You know, it's going to depend on the situation, so I'm not going to be able to say everything, but a bike lane should be about 5 feet wide, and the average bicyclist is going to be 2 to 2.5 feet wide, so you should have enough room in the adjacent travel lane if it's 11 or 12 feet wide to force your 7-foot car through there. And I say that, you know, we just created this big algebra problem, but there should be enough space and for people to get along safely if there's a bike lane present. If there's wider lanes and the bicyclist is sharing the lane, certainly sharing the lane laterally and doing that safely, I think, is important. Anytime you see a bicyclist, I think this is probably the biggest key, is put on your brakes and slow down and then mm-hmm. figure out how to pass. I think that's some of the most dangerous situations when people are passing at highway speed and not slowing down before they pass a bicycle. So take your time
right.
and get around.
One point, Mark, that I wanted to clarify, too, is that you're assuming that the cyclist is somewhat experienced and riding a pretty straight line. What I have seen is some cyclists are they're maybe new to riding, and it's more difficult to ride a straight line. So you're swerving a little bit, and so you're taking up more space than some cyclists may, and that can be a more dangerous situation. So for the motorist to slow down, it really is important.
When communities are working to make their cities more bike-friendly, of course, there can be a lot of problems for the city. I mean, there are roads that you just can't put a bike lane on. In your work, Mark, in trying to encourage communities to be more bike-friendly, what are you trying to make happen?
You know, I think there's a lot of different options in different communities. And Iowa being a rural state, you don't need bike lanes. In fact, probably, 85 to 90% of city streets are just fine for cars and bikes to share the road. It's when that traffic volume and that traffic speed increases that you may have to take some extra efforts to change the facilities and develop infrastructure. Trails aren't the only answer. Bike lanes aren't the only answer, but certainly there's opportunities that you can restripe the road. There was a project on Ingersoll in Des Moines where they took a four-lane road, turned it into a three-lane road with a center turn lane, and created bike lanes. It's reduced rear-end crashes by 50%. So the benefits to the motor vehicle traffic has been great. And then it's had this exclusive space for bicyclists to be able to travel the road and hopefully increase the amount of bicycles using that area.
I want to bring John Wauer into the conversation. He is also volunteering with RAGBRAI this year from Cedar Rapids. Hello, John.
Hello.
How are you today?
I'm fine. Thank you
so much for being with us. You also rode the route early this year, and there has been some talk about road conditions maybe not being great because of the intense heat causing cracking and buckling in the roads. Did you see any of that when you were out there?
No, I didn't really see any. I think the city has been working quite hard to keep the roads in shape or to improve the roads and fill the potholes. We certainly have potholes in some of the county roads and some of the city roads, and I think the road crews have been working to remove that. As far as the last 2 weeks, I guess I have to plead ignorance. I haven't been out in the last 2 weeks out on the route.
Well, you wouldn't want to ride it 2 weeks in a row, I wouldn't think. So I think that's understandable, John. We were just talking about cities and municipalities trying to make their communities more bike-friendly. I know that that's been a major effort in Cedar Rapids, hasn't it?
Yes, it has. We have just received the Bicyclists of America Bicycle-Friendly Community Bronze Award. I think there's some other cities. I believe that Iowa City and Des Moines also have that now. And we're working to get some bike lanes in town and to also add more trails. And it's always an issue of getting the money to do this. Even painting the bike lanes costs money. But I think we're seeing progress and have certainly high hopes for improving that.
We've got a few minutes left in the show, and we do want to hear from you about what it is that keeps you coming back to RAGBRAI again and again at 866-780-9100. We have Denise Bracker on the line now, and Denise is one of those people that actually travels the world to come to RAGBRAI. She was a foreign exchange student a few years ago, but now you're back again. Hello, Denise.
Hey, Charity.
Thank you so much for being here today. And where are you coming from?
I am from Switzerland, and I live in a small town called Mülligen.
Okay, and when did you first do RAGBRAI?
The first time I did it was in 2008, and this actually is my second time.
Okay, what brought you back this year?
I have been traveling with my boyfriend for a while now, and when we planned our trip, we knew that we were going to go to New Zealand, and America was on the way back, so I told him, since we both like bicycling a lot, that maybe we should go there, and so he can meet my host family from the U.S.
Did it take any convincing to say, and while we're there, we're going to spend an entire week bicycling across the state at the hottest time of the year, hotter than it ever, ever gets at home?
No, not really. He really liked the idea of doing that, and I guess now we're here, and it's hotter than I expected it to be, but I hope it's still going to be okay.
I'm sure you'll be okay. Ride early, drink lots of water.
Yeah.
What made the experience so special the first time that you would come back and do it again?
I really liked meeting up with all my relatives because there's all the different families, like my host mother and her siblings used to do it when they were younger. And they got their kids to ride it, too. So when I go to Ragbri, I'm going to see all my relatives, my host cousins, my host uncle, my host sisters. That was really great. And I also liked meeting all the other people because there's so many from all different places. Yeah, and I liked the atmosphere with all the friendly peoples in the town and the, I don't know, just hanging out with people after the ride in the bike of the biking club. It was a very unique experience.
Wonderful. Well, Denise, thank you so much for talking with us today.
You're welcome. Thanks a lot.
Denise is coming to do Ragbri for her second time from Switzerland, and there are people who come from all over the world and, of course, all over the state as well to do Ragbri. Shelley sent us this email. She says, this will be my sixth year. Last year while riding my bicycle, I was struck by a pickup on Memorial Day, and I was unable to get back on my bike until Ragbri. On the subject of bike laws, 3-foot passing should easily be passed. And I'm sure that many avid bicyclists have had a lot of close calls out there on the road. There has also been some recent conversation, a lot of it online, about some conflicts between law enforcement and bicyclists, particularly on the High Trestle Trail. I've read a couple of accounts on blogs about bicyclists who were stopped even though they hadn't necessarily done anything wrong, according to their account, and ticketed for not complying with police orders. And Mark, as you hear about these conflicts, and of course we don't know exactly what happened, there is no video, there is no audio of these incidents, we only have these accounts, but as you're hearing about these conflicts, what is your reaction?
You know, two things. I think law enforcement needs to be fair and even-handed. I think that's probably really important to note. And I don't think stop sign violations are isolated to bicyclists. I think we wouldn't be putting up red light cameras all over the state if motorists didn't run red lights also. But I do think that things need to be fair, things need to be even-handed, and when intimidation or harassment becomes part of it, I don't think that's proper, and I think that needs to stop. I also think bicyclists need to operate safely. We had a bicyclist who ran a stop sign on the Wrecking River Valley Trail last year who was killed. And so I think taking safety into mind needs to come into these operations. But I think law enforcement really needs to work closely with the cycling community to make sure what they're doing has the intention, has the ability to protect cyclists and the community's safety. I think that's something that needs to happen.
We have just a couple of seconds left. Can you give me just some definite rules that bicyclists need to follow that they may not necessarily always follow? Bicyclists do need to stop at red lights. They do need to stop at stop signs in spite of the fact that they're going a lot slower than a car.
Yeah, I mean, stop signs, hand signals, lights at night. These are important things to be visible and to be predictable. I think those are the key to keeping everybody safe.
All right, Mark Wyatt, thank you so much.
Thank you, and I look forward to riding, and hopefully you're out on Ragbri 50 soon.
That's right. Hopefully before then. But Mark Wyatt is the executive director of the Bicycle Coalition. Nate Vander Wyde, president of Bicyclists of Iowa, thank you.
Thank you for allowing us the time to talk.
And John Wauer, thanks a lot for being on the show with us today.
Thank you.
And I'll leave you with this email from Beth in Osceola. Her family has ridden Ragbri for many years. She says it's an adventure and a great way to see the state of Iowa. Talk of Iowa is produced by Emily Woodbury. Our executive producer is Jeff Schmidt. Technical support from Sarah McCammon.